estimating end biomass in sorghum using aerial and ground-based phenotypes.
All right, thanks to the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk, and to you for sticking around this late into the session. I appreciate it. I especially appreciate getting to be here because I am neither a crop physiologist nor a crop modeler. I actually do plant genetics mostly, but this talk has nothing to do with genetics, so bear with me. I'm going to start by acknowledging the team of people that has been working on this project. This is part of a larger collaboration with the ARPA-E Terra group at Purdue, and we've got a lot of expertise going on, the main person involved being Dr. Mitch Teinstra there in the middle, and we've got engineers and remote sensing experts and aerial technology and information technology and remote sensing and all different kinds of expertise here represented on the screen, as well as a crop modeler from CSIRO, Scott Chapman, and some individuals from IBM Research who have been helping us with some of the analytics as well. So why use sorghum for biomass? First, it's water efficient. You can create varieties that are photoperiod sensitive, which means that when you plant them here in the northern parts of the United States anyway, that they don't flower, at least not until like the end of October. And so they grow until you've got a huge amount of biomass. They also have certain biochemical properties that we can incorporate, things like the brown midrib mutations that allow the plant material to be a little bit more digestible by the different processes that go into creating bioenergy. And also, it's just so much larger. So this here in the picture is corn. That's the sorghum, right? There's a lot more mass as far as tons per hectare than crops like corn. The next question, why are we using aerial and ground-based platforms? I think that it's probably apparent at this point that aerial-based platforms are beneficial for a lot of reasons in, say, plant breeding, because it allows you to screen more locations at more time points without having to physically go to the locations or go out for pre-dawn water potential measurements every day. That sounds horrible. Aerial platforms provide a lot of good benefits. It can be complicated, but I would advocate for a combination of approaches depending on what it is that you need to measure and why. You get a lot of different perspectives based on what method you're using. So maybe you want to look very closely at leaves, or maybe you want to examine panicles, or maybe you want to get an idea of the entire plot structure and plant morphology. The other thing is that phenotypes are oftentimes very perspective dependent. This is an image taken from the same plot as this one, but from a different perspective. And you would not notice that this was there if you were looking at it from here. This is actually something that occurs kind of frequently in sorghum. There's a drought gene. Sorry, I just gave a talking to the room on drought. There is a dwarfing gene in sorghum that is unstable. That is, it can revert back to being a taller plant. There's actually a couple of dwarf genes in sorghum. But this one has obviously had a revertant here in this plot, and so there's one tall plant sticking up. And then also Mother Nature. This past year we had a pretty significant rain event followed by a lot of wind. There's a pretty nice storm there that came through. Obviously we had a lot of root lodging, a lot of stalk lodging, and this is what some of our plots looked like. Not all of them, but a lot of them did. And if you are looking at taking ground-based measurements on a regular basis, it's not safe to physically walk through these plots. We did sometimes, but it's you can twist ankles pretty easily. It's a lot to climb through. So the goal was to be able to predict the end of season biomass using ground truth data from earlier in the season and then evaluate how well we're able to do that. Second, to model final biomass using multiple different remotely sensed features and then evaluate feature combinations and different model approaches. We've not yet looked at combining ground truth and remotely sensed features in order to predict the end of season biomass, because in this experiment my goal was that it would be nice to be able to use remotely sensed early season phenotypes to be able to say, okay, these are the lines that I would want to cross as a breeder early on to get the final biomass in the end that would be highest for the next year. So these were the goals of what we were doing. This is just a picture to show ground-based phenotyping and remotely sensed phenotyping. The data I'm talking about today does come from these rotary wing drones, and actually this year we implemented handhelds that use the Fieldbook app. I want to make sure that I thank the creators of that app, I think Jesse Pullen's group, but that has made our work a lot easier because we're collecting many, many, many thousands of data points on a very regular basis, and we did that all by paper last year, and that was very time-consuming and also error-prone. All right, so the experimental design was that we used 18 different varieties. These were replicated 8 times in very large 12-row plots. So it's 144 total plots, 4 of which are at, 4 of the replications are at high density, and 4 are at low density. So you can see our plot map here. We have a rep is an entire range here. So here's one rep, here's another rep, 3, 4. So those are all high density and then low density. The densities we used are here. The high density is actually the commercial, what a farmer would use. That's sort of the agronomically relevant density. And then the lower density is kind of what a lot of researchers might use if they're trying to be able to look at things from the sky, right? So there's this thought that if you put plants a little farther apart, then maybe you can see them better from the drones, right? Because that high density, plants are about this far apart, and that's really difficult. The lower density, they're about this far apart. It's about what the spacing turns out to be. Of these varieties, 2 of them were photoperiod sensitive. A handful were what we call forage sorghums, which means that they grow a little bit bushier and grassier, and the focus is on the green material for animals to eat. And then a handful of them were grain sorghums, which means that the focus for the plant is on making grain to use for other commercial purposes like birdseed or feed or human use. For ground truth data, we took weekly measurements of a large number of phenotypes, but here I'm focusing on just a couple. So we took weekly measurements of height and stalk diameter at the base from 3 tagged representative plants in the row. So this was important. We went through at the beginning of the season and tagged 3 plants that we then followed throughout the growing season so that we could model those individuals' plants' growth as a representative of the plot. From that, we calculated the stalk volume using this function. It's actually as a cone, which you could argue is not super representative of a sorghum variety because a lot of them actually grow pretty straight, and their stalks are pretty thick even at the top. This is data from 2015. This past year in 2016, we actually took a diameter at the top of the plant as well so that we can model it more closely. But we're using data from 2015 for this example. The data collected is from 108 of those 144 plots that I mentioned. The reason for this is that the low-density plots, although you might think that they're easier to look at, actually what happens is that sorghum tillers, right? So once the sorghum starts to tiller, the low-density plots actually become really difficult to get through. It's a lot more bushy. It's like climbing through a jungle. So we just focused on 2 of the low-density and did 4 of the high-density. And these data were taken across 7 weekly dates, weeks 8 to 14 after planting. And then our end-of-season measurement for biomass was actually a large biomass harvester that goes through and completely destroys all above-ground plant material at whatever inch setting that you set it at for 2 of the rows through every plot. And that would be how commercial production would be done, is to use a biomass harvester. So what I did for the ground truth estimate was to model the growth using a sigmoidal curve. So this is a plot of the main stem volume based on the number of days of growth. And using those sigmoidal models, the function, I predicted out a date at the end of the season, the date of our biomass harvest, to predict what the overall stock volume would be at that date, and then saw how well correlated that was with the actual biomass harvest that we observed. what happens is that at the high density, the correlation is pretty moderate. But what happens is the low density, or using a combined prediction, it's pretty terrible. And part of this is because obviously we're not really accounting for tillers. This is just main stem volume. I did try running a model that accounted for tillers, but my model was not great. I think I was sort of overestimating the number of tillers that the plant was producing because we didn't have a lot of information from the tillers. We had a count and we had a height and diameter for the main tiller, but then after that, not so much. So the point is, this ground truth data is hard to get and it's not super accurate. What we did also at the same time was we were flying our drones over the field and acquired a series of data types. The first type I'll describe is the hyperspectral data. So these are acquired from UAVs, and from the hyperspectral data cubes, we calculated three different types of information. One is the plot level mean spectra. So we averaged across bands and then averaged across the plot for 144 bands. The second thing is called extended multi-attribute profiles. This gets at the morphology of the hyperspectral pixels, and it gets at the texture of what's happening in the plot. And then the final one is we took a number of popular hyperspectral indices to try to get at different aspects of vegetation. So that's our features from hyperspectral. The other thing that I did with the hyperspectral data is I conducted a simple ratio sweep. What this means is that for every band in the hyperspectral data set, I took the ratio of that band to every other band, and then correlated that with biomass. Right, so this is a correlation plot of ratios of hyperspectral data to biomass. So this is from 400 nanometers to 900 nanometers. The blue, dark blue, is a high positive correlation. Dark red is a high negative correlation. So you can see there's some features that are going on that are highly correlated. The reason these are inversely related is because obviously you're doing a ratio from one to the other, and then it flips, right? So it should be, the matrix should be inverted like that. The next piece of data that we got from our remote sensing was heights of our plots as estimated from RGB imagery. The way that you do this is that the RGB images are taken from one camera. It's not stereo imaging, but it's one camera, but the rate, the frame rate is enough that you have an overlap in your image acquisition, right? And so you're getting kind of a pseudo stereo image for any one pixel. So for each pixel across all these plots, we're able to estimate not only the x and y position of that pixel, but the z coordinate as well. That gives us an estimate of height in the plot across pixels. And what we can do then is for every pixel in a given plot, we can say what's the distribution of those heights. So this is allowing us to not just take one model or one estimate for overall plant height for that plot. We're not just getting one number. We're actually getting a description across the plot. So it gets out a little bit more of the morphology across the plant than just the overall height. And you can see this demonstrated a little bit in this figure. We have here a plot of a grain sorghum type. Grain sorghums don't tend to tiller very much at all. The red is high density and the blue is low density. You can see they look pretty much the same. Whereas if you're looking at a forage sorghum, which do tiller, then the high density here is a very different distribution than this low density, where it has produced a lot of tillers and it causes this shift in our distribution of heights because you've got the main stem as well as some tillers farther down, right? So the reason we did not just take one value, like a mean from the plot or the 95th percentile of the pixel distribution, was because we're actually getting more information than just the one value. And so the input for this feature becomes each of the bins, the frequency. Fitting individual phenotypes does not give very good results. This is for some other related phenotypes who are predicting plant height. If we try to determine that based on the sense height, it's actually pretty good. But you can see other things like stalk volume have very poor predictions when you're just looking at one feature at a time. And so the thought is that if we fuse features and use a predictive learning method, we can improve the performance. We tried three different approaches for this. One was support vector regression, the second was a simple lasso approach, and the third was lasso with bootstrapping. All of these involved fivefold cross-validation. And what we saw was that the simple lasso outperform the SVR by quite a bit. The lasso with bootstrapping, it looks like it performed a little bit lower, which it kind of did, but the thought there is that the performance was a little bit unstable across the partitions for the simple lasso, and that helped a little bit with kind of evening out the instability. So that's the kind of prediction that we're getting. So conclusions are that aerial phenotyping is a valuable tool, as I mentioned. Planting density is a crucial consideration in your experimental design. This is important because a lot of people, like I said, think that planting farther apart allows you to see things better, but actually it makes the predictions worse because of the way sorghum responds to that. So if you're looking to model things for agronomic purposes, use an agronomically relevant planting density. Simple lasso and other feature fusion models hold promise, but more work is needed. We're still just starting to explore this area. And in the future, I need to incorporate actual crop modeling into my predictions. We just started working with Scott Jackson at CSIRO, and we're working with the APSIM crop model. So once we input some of our other phenotypes that we've looked at into that model, that will allow us to better and more accurately predict these sorts of traits. Also, we have a larger population that we planted next to this, that we've genotyped. It's about 900 lines. So we'd like to be able to build up relationships with our aerial data that we can then project and predict onto that larger set, and then get back to the genetics that I actually enjoy doing. And then it'd be nice to identify the most informative features so we can prioritize our future ground reference collection, because it does take a lot of time. And then in the future, and current, I'm looking at using aerial features to supplement or bypass traditional phenotyping for gene discovery. So using features directly to map genes. And with that, thanks again. Well, if there's any time for questions.